Hey guys, welcome to, I can never get through the intro without giggling. So anyway, welcome to another episode of Snacks and Chats. This time we actually have snacks. Got some panikeke from Ōtara and Ben has supplied the twisties and the beer.
Classic.
Yeah. Both classic Kiwi snacks, I reckon. and yes, I'm Leilani and...
I'm Ben.
Ben is speaking this time.
Yeah, got me a mic.
Technology. So I'm with Nate Nauer.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very nervous.
Don't be nervous. Yeah. You do live radio all the time.
Isn't this your job?
Yeah, it's a little bit different when you're on the other side. So
we know you best as one of the voices on MyFM's Breakfast Drive show.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to start with asking you is, when people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them?
Straight off the bat, I'm from Samoa. I'm first generation, so I was born here, and then didn't do too well during school, so my parents put me on a plane to Samoa.
How old were you when they did that?
12, 13.
And how long did you school in Samoa?
Right through high school. I think I was through my second year in intermediate at De La Salle College in Mangere, and I got shoulder tapped to leave the school.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have to be really naughty to do that in intermediate, right?
I don't think I was naughty. I just don't think the teachers got my jokes. So. Yeah.
So what jokes? What kind of jokes?
A few pranks here and there. I had a really good rapport with teachers right through primary, right through intermediate. I may have overstepped the line in one situation where I loosened the wheel nuts on a teacher's car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might do it.
Yeah. I think that was like my last chance at school. So
you're that young and they're shoulder tapping you like, yo, you have to leave school. So what were your options?
Not many. I almost went to school at Tangaro College. I was supposed to be a go and then came back. They said they don't want me. So I'd been to like three primary schools before that.
Wow. Yeah. That must have been really tough to be that age and have schools and people be like, no, we don't want you. That must have been, how did that affect you at such a young age?
It didn't really. I just thought it was exciting. Oh, where are we going now? But the three primary schools I went to were in walking distance of each other. Back then, the Pasifika community was kind of just starting out in South Auckland, where I was. So there was Readout North Primary, Chapel Downs and Dawson Primary. So I started at Dawson and made my way to Chapel Downs and ended up at Readout North.
So do you think back on that and wonder how your life might have gone if you hadn't been sent away to Samoa?
Sometimes I kind of do, but then I think about where I'm at now and I'm like, man, I hit the winning lottery ticket for what I've done, all the stuff I've been. Can I swear on this one?
Yeah, yeah.
So all the shit that I've done, and I'm like, I'm still okay. I'm not in prison. I've got friends that are doing time. I've got friends that are not friends anymore because, you know, they've got... They're dependent on drugs now, so things like that. So, yeah. I look back and I have a laugh, but I remember at the time it wasn't a laughing matter.
And so what do you think the difference is? So these are your friends, these are your peers, they're people you grew up with.
Yeah.
What do you think the difference is that some of them have gone to jail, some of them are now dependent on drugs, and you are you? How does that happen?
I think I'm just lucky.
Yeah.
I can't separate myself from... There are guys that I think that if they were in my position could do my job better than me, that I grew up with. They're better storytellers, funnier guys. I don't know, I feel like I just got lucky.
And how was that transition going from New Zealand to Samoa schools? That must have been tough.
I freaking hated it. You just start figuring out that, you know, you want to talk to girls and you start getting good at it, sort of.
Yeah.
And you're like, you have meeting places like Manukau Shopping Centre, late night Thursday, everyone's meeting up at the library. And then straight away, it's from that to sitting in a hostel at Samoa College.
And how was your Samoan? Like, did they make fun of you in terms of being like a Kiwi boy or...?
It was rough. It was terrible. I think the first year was hell. My Samoan wasn't the best. But one thing I was lucky about is that my dad never accepted us speaking English at home. Not because he was pro, let's speak Samoa, it's because he couldn't speak a word of English. So that was okay, but the first day I walked through the doors of the Samoa College hostel, the boys, like, they let you know where you are now. So
yeah.
So after my first, because I had braids at the time. I don't know why the fuck I had braids. But like bone thugs are big back then. Yeah. I had braids. I went to Samoa. And as soon as I walked in, as soon as you're different from the bunch there at Samoa, they automatically think you're a show-off or you're a rich barlangi. So they cut my hair with a machete and gave me a hiding. So that was my first day. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Not like chop, but they just kind of...
Yeah. So they held you down and...
Yeah. I didn't fight it. I was like, there's six guys here bigger than me. I'm just going to...
This is happening.
Yeah, this is happening. So I just let it pass.
So that's your first day?
That's my first day.
And then, so how do you make friends after six guys hold you down, chop your hair off with a machete and give you a hiding?
It's just like the movies. You got to go after the biggest dude there. So I had to try and figure out what my currency was, because I was pretty good during school of making myself that guy and amongst my peers. So I was never the strongest. I was never the good-looking guy. So I had to try and make my words my currency. So I used to call out guys in a situation where they couldn't actually fight. So if you wanted to be the baddest guy at school, you had to do it in a funny situation. So the guy that I went toe-to-toe with ended up being a Manu Samoa player. His name's Henry Toilangi. We're good now. Back then, he was head boy. He had been capped under the first 15 threes in a row. Samoa College first 15 had been undefeated. This was like the guy. And I was like, oh, man, how do I get to this dude? Because everyone loves this guy. Because we had like school assembly out in the sun. I thought, if I'm going to call this guy, I'm going to do it here. They're usually at the end of school assembly, they ask if anybody wants to lead a song or finish off with a prayer. And I put my hand up, and the guys I kind of knew in my class were like, what the fuck is this guy doing? So I went up and I was like, oh, I'm going to do it. So I called out the head boy. I was like, you fucking pussy. You want to go? Let's go here. And the teacher's like, what the fuck is going on? Like, let's fucking go. And then from me speaking English and calling out this guy in English, a few other guys I didn't know were from New Zealand, so they came and sought me out afterwards. And these are guys that had been kicked out from school in New Zealand, so we kind of
that was your met crew from there. Then.
But the head boy, he didn't do anything. Like Henry, he just sat there, was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But our principal at the time, Mr. Rimoni, that's the last thing I remember calling him out, and then I woke up in the principal's office because he had like backhanded me.
Oh, he backhanded you and knocked you out?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Samoa.
Yeah, yeah. But he was cool. We talked about it and I let him know the situation. He goes, oh, it's so backwards over there. He said it was so good of you not to tell on him because we don't like telltales in Samoa. Okay. I'm glad I didn't do that then. But through that, I met some close mates, a guy from Otahu College who got kicked out, got sent there. A couple of guys from the States that got kicked out that were schooling there. So,
isn't it funny how you get sent to Samoa to sort of shape up your ways or to be a better person or whatever, but it doesn't sound like the right environment for that
not
sort of
all.
Thing.
If you're an egg here in New Zealand, you're going to be an egg over there, if not worse.
Okay, so did you finish your schooling in Samoa College?
Yeah, I did. For my last year at Samoa College, my attendance was really bad. And it's sad because you let your parents down because, you know, community's tight-knit. Everyone's talking about how well their kids are doing. And
your parents are like, do-do-do.
Well, I'm pretty sure they saw it from the get-go because they print your results in the newspaper. I remember waking up one morning and I woke up because I could hear my dad going, he's a fucking useless idiot. Oh. I was like, huh? What's going on here? I walked out. I just woke up. And my mum's going, go away, go away. She's telling me to get out of the kitchen. I was like, well, is it me or is it my brother? And they show the newspaper like second to last in English. And my dad's like, how the fuck do you come second to last in English?
In Samoa.
I think I wasn't trying to be bad. I think I was just a lazy kid growing up. I always found the easy way out of things. So.
And so you finished school in Samoa. Mm. And when do you come back to New Zealand?
I came back to New Zealand in 2001, and that was fucked up, that just coming back and trying to re-immerse myself, because I'd been maybe 6 years away.
Yeah, that's a long time, especially at that age, right?
Yeah, and everyone's listening to like fucking Dipset now, and everyone's wearing all these baggy jeans and clothes, and I couldn't quite figure out what I'm supposed to wear. And at that point, most kids start working at the age of 14, 15, so I couldn't get a job. Because every time I went to go apply for a job to try and make some coin, everyone's like, oh, what experience do you have? I'm like, oh, I don't. And they're like, how the fuck are you this old and not have a job? How have you not had a job up until this point? I'm like, oh, well, I lived in Samoa. And they're like, oh, you're a fob. I'm like, what? So it was really hard to transition back into into life here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I ended up doing every under the table job you could think of, every shitty job that you could think of, I was doing. And because I was so homesick, I used to try and watch Tangata Pasifika anytime I could.
So you came back to New Zealand and you were homesick for Samoa?
Yeah, I was homesick for Samoa because I'd made friends there. I'd built a reputation around town where I was cool with people. And then I come back and I got to start all over again. I don't have a support network anymore because I kind of left my family on bad terms. So I came here just trying to look for a place to stay and things like that. I ended up moving to New Plymouth for about 6 months, working on a dairy farm. That transition, it's real foggy because it was a real fucked up time.
Is there anything when you look back and you're like, oh man, it's lucky that that happened, or it's lucky that I met that person?
I had a Balangi mate, he's my best mate, his name's Alan Skilling. We had been friends through primary school, and my grasp of the English language came because I always hung out at their house and learning things from their side. But at that point, like, I'd never used the internet before.
What year is this?
This is 2008. This is 2001.
Yeah.
And he was like, fuck, you gotta check this out.
There's this thing.
And cool. He was showing and I couldn't fucking process it. I was like, so it's like TV. He was like, nah, it's like, you can. And he showed me, he was like, oh. And like, not to sound like, bring down your podcast, but he was like, oh, you can watch porn on this. Yeah, and, I was like, and I was like, what? And he's like, you can choose different categories. And then I remember him clicking on this video and we sat there for maybe 2 hours waiting for like a 3-minute clip. He's like, it's almost there. I'm like, oh shit. So, and then he showed me and it blew my mind and I was like, oh. I
was what,
like,
what else can you... What porn was it?
Well, no. BBW wasn't big back then, so... Yeah, so...
So porn was your life-changing moment?
No, it wasn't there, but he was like, I told him how much, like, oh, what else can you do on this? You can search anything. And I remember, oh, can you type in Samoa? I think it was into Yahoo.
Yeah.
He typed it into Yahoo and up came this website called SamoaLive.com. And I was like, oh, I can have a look at that. And from that, I saw there was like a posting. They were like, oh, looking for talent to be on a radio show. And at that point, I've been... fucking around cleaning toilets. What else did I do? I used to work for this place called the Tool Bun, and my office was a container. I used to sit outside. It was fucking leaking on a grinder. I had to clean tools and put oil on them and shit. I was like, oh fuck, anything would be better than this. So I asked my friend to send an email.
Whoa.
So I didn't have a phone or any of that. So my mate Alan was pretty much, he was my fucking...
He was your plug.
He was the best thing ever. He let me borrow his car to go to job interviews and spotted me some cash when I had none. He had a caravan outside his parents' house, so he let me sleep on the floor of his caravan when I needed to. So yeah, I hit up that posting on the website and I ended up at New FM. I didn't know that you had to have like prior experience and shit like that. So they were screening people via phone call, but they thought they were talking to me, but they were talking to my mate Alan because it was his phone. So they rang him with the number he sent on the email and he was talking to them. So when I went in, they didn't make the connection that wasn't me. So I went in, had an audition, and I was sitting with a whole bunch of other people that were from radio school and shit. So I went into the audition and the guy was like, oh, so have you done radio before? I was like, no. Okay, just talk for something for 30 seconds without saying amoa. Like, cool. So I started talking about the blues. And it was a real shit year, so I was...
I had a lot to say.
So I went in and they're like, oh, we'll call you back. I didn't expect anything because when I was sitting in the waiting room and the reception area, I spoke to another young guy who had been doing a broadcasting degree in Christchurch. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Yeah.
I went away, but they ended up calling back a week later to come back. And they didn't give me the job, but they said, hey, if you want to hang around and, you know, do some shit, there's no paid work and you can clean the fridge for the sausages for the promo team and shit. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll hang around, which I didn't mind because I ended up finding myself a graveyard job driving a forklift at the airport. So I'd work there at night and then go work at New FM during the day. So I worked the whole year at New FM without getting paid.
And so what were you literally doing, like what you just described, like... cleaning out the fridge, helping the drive team.
I would sit there. I ended up about 3 months in getting a spot on the Samoan community program. And that was right up my alley. I met some people that were doing good things in the Samoan community. I felt at home with them. And I was learning my way around their broadcast system. They would do their community program Thursday and Sunday nights. So it got me a chance to get in there and learn what they were using.
And it put you in touch, I guess, that still, I'm assuming you still felt a bit homesick and it helped sort of put you back in touch with that.
There was an old guy there by the name of Paul Numata who was in charge of the programming there. So everybody in their team was quite old and they were trying to engage younger people. So I was lucky, I just came from Samoa, so he gave me a slot there. So I had my own slot where I was talking in Samoan from midnight on a Thursday to 3 a.m. Friday morning, and there would be like drunk Samoan kids who had just come out of RPOA ringing up, you know, we were having these conversations in Samoan. So that was good.
That's cool. Yeah. And so then how did it go from that to, I guess, a more permanent job?
They opened up a radio school on Queen Street. And they had a partnership where they send people that get scholarships. So they ended up sending me there. At the end of that, it was a six-month course and they give you some sort of like bogus diploma in fucking broadcasting or some shit. I must have been like three times. Yeah. I remember the CEO at the time, her name's Debbie Baker. She ran all the radio schools in New Zealand. She rang me up and she said, hey, look, I'm going to fail you. And I was like, shit, that's not a good look for you, especially with the partnership you have with New
Zealand. Is that what you
That's what I said.
<It's> so good.
And she was like, what do you say? I was like, I'll pass you on. I don't know if you know Sina Moore. She was our CEO at the time. Yeah. She was like, what the fuck? It's like, how can you fail this course? All you had to do was show up. And I was like, oh, I was tired. And she's like, tired from what? I was like, tired from working and not getting paid. And she's like, don't go there. So they had a discussion with Debbie Baker and she ended up passing me. So she was like, show up to graduation. I was like, cool. So I got this fucking bullshit diploma. That I honestly, I don't know what I did with it. I remember having a fight at Safari Lounge that night. Because someone gave me a whole bunch of whiskey for free that was working at the door and they kicked me out. But it's the last I remember that. But then after that, they offered me a job as a copywriter, writing ads. But I knew deep down I don't want to write ads. So they gave me this bullshit wage. They're like, oh, we're going to offer you $30,000 a year to write ads. I was like, fuck off. I make more driving a forklift. So I kind of said no thanks. And I ended up, maybe a few months later, I ended up back in Samoa. So my parents are going through a rough patch, so I went back there to see what I could do to help out. Ended up working at 2AP. So I worked there for a year. I was doing the breakfast show.
So you did the breakfast show in Samoa?
Yeah.
How was that?
I loved it. I loved it. I was like the man. Like old people were giving me free shit at the Waikiki. So like after my shift, because we were based at Mooringa, which was about 2K walk from town, and after my shift I'd walk back to the markets and like, I'd get free like bangekes and like, a cup of coke, and I thought, fuck, I could do this, you know. But it wasn't until halfway through that year I knew that I needed to make more money to kind of help my parents out. I just tried to figure out my comeback or make my way back into New Zealand.
So this time you're planning it this time. You're not going to leave it up to chance.
Nah, I had a girlfriend. I think when I came back, she was still working at New FM. She must have told management that I was back in the country and looking for a job. So they asked her if I wanted work, I could just come back in. But they weren't going to give me the copywriting job or any other job. They wanted me to start again from the bottom. But at that point, I'd done on air. So they were like, oh, you can do like a weekend shift or something. So I took it with both hands.
And then from the weekend shift, that progressed to?
It progressed to hanging out with a guy I call a couple of guys I call my mentor, but Mario Ngawa and Oscar Kightley. These guys were massive, massive for me.
Because they were doing the breakfast show at that point, eh?
Yeah. And every time someone would fall away or someone was sick, Mario would get me in to either produce the show or be a second voice on the show. So he kind of showed me the ropes and eventually fought for me to get a full-time slot during the week.
And so when that opportunity, or how did that opportunity with MyFM come up?
It was a massive shift. I think MediaWeeks had just acquired MyFM at the time. And maybe they were doing a clean out. I'm not sure, because a whole bunch of voices started disappearing. And I think the general manager at the time, her name was Mirjana Hawthorne, she got in contact with me. I was doing the drive show on UFM at this point and wanted to catch up for a coffee. And I thought, oh, yeah, cool. I can go and catch up, have a coffee. So she sold me this idea of being on MyFM, and for me that was unheard of, because MyFM, you know, Māori broadcasters, it is a hip-hop station, but with the frequency they're on in Auckland, I've never heard of anybody other than Māori being on that station. So she sold me the idea and I was like, oh yeah, I kind of like this. And then I never heard from her again for about 4 months, and I thought, oh, whatever. After that 4 months, I get a phone call from the guy that runs The Edge, who is now in charge of MyFM, and he asked me to come in and have a chat. So I came and had a chat, and then next thing you know, I'm doing the drive show on on why.
How tough was it to make that decision to leave New FM to go to My FM? Did you feel guilty about that?
I didn't feel guilty at the time. There were things happening at New FM. There was a change in management. At that point, Sina Moore, who had been... She was like a second mum to me. She had no longer become CEO. There was a new guy in the position of CEO who I didn't really see eye to eye with. And at that time, they had merged 531 back into New FM because they had kind of separated and New FM was its own entity and it was young, it was vibrant, everybody wanted to do cool things. And the old guard from 531, they merged back into New FM and they kind of strong-armed the place. Not in a bad way, but with what happened, they ended up taking over. So ideas that I had for on air or for the station, they didn't appreciate. But we kind of came to this agreement where it was kind of just a verbal agreement. It was like, okay, so heading forward, how would you feel about becoming this, which was the program director at the time? Because I'd covered for the person that was doing the job, who was away sick. So I'd done all the programming, I'd done all the rosters for the announcers. I'd created a style guide for the announcers, which they had asked me to do. And the day of the announcer, they were going to announce me as the PD, he calls me into the office and he says, hey, change of plans. There's some things we didn't do properly with regards to the current PD. We're going to keep him on.
Oh, no.
But don't worry, we're going to pay you what he's paid.
Yeah.
But you just keep doing what you're doing. And at that point, I just flipped. I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, you're lucky I don't reach across. And because I wanted to. I wanted to grab him by the throat. But I ended up walking out and my show, he told me 10 minutes before my show started.
Which, oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So I remember I walked outside. I was like, nah, fuck. Nah. Because I had a co-host, my mate Henry Jennings at the time, and he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know how to panel. They didn't have any cover. And I was
like, he must have been freaking out.
Yeah. So I kind of bottled it up and I walked back inside and I just did the show.
Yeah.
I just did the show. It might have been a shitty show, but I still did it. And then I caught him. I was like, I'm not coming back. And I was like, no, we can sort this out. I'm not coming back. And I remember I was going home, I was like, well, fuck, that was a dumb idea. Like, how? I was on a good wage and I was doing okay. And I was like, fuck. And he kind of knew that I had nowhere else to go. But that Monday, fuck, out of the blue, I couldn't believe the time. I got a call saying, hey, like from Leon Rett, who's in charge of all radio at MediaWorks. He's like, hey, we want you to come. And I was like, oh, when? It's like, now, come in now and we can talk about you moving over this week if you want to. I was like, fuck yeah, let's go. So I came back and I kind of worked out the details with HR. The hardest thing was letting the team know that I was leaving New FM because we all had dreams of, we always used to call it the sleeping giant because they had all these frequencies and, you know, we knew that a lot of the talent out there and mainstream had been born from this place, so we always wanted to make it big. But then they also understood how I got screwed over there, so yeah.
Because I remember when you first came out, it made huge waves. It made a huge impact.
Oh, it wasn't the best. I still remember my first day at My FM, the text machine. Hayden Hare, he was an institution.
Yeah, he was.
And
because you took over Hare.
Yeah. Fuck is this coconut? Get the spob off my radio. I remember it was non-stop and I just kept reading out like, but I eventually wore them down, I guess. Yeah.
I've forgotten about that because Hayden Hare, he was an institution. Did you work, like, you must have, if you hadn't worried about that before you stepped into the shoes, you would have definitely worried about it when you read those text messages.
I was in his studio the day after he had his final show. So I remember driving home. I was somewhere and I was driving home and I was listening to Mai and he had a farewell show. He had all these guests come through. He had like Scribe on the phone saying, we're going to miss you. He had Mariko on the decons. No. He had all these celebrities and they were all taking all these pot shots about who this new DJ is going to be. And I was like, fuck, here we go. This is going to be rough. And the next day they asked me to come in. So I come in and they just want to show me around. And there's Hayden like putting shit in a box. And I'm like, fuck.
Oh.
This is fucking awkward.
Were you like, you couldn't have waited for the guy to leave the building?
I said to the guy, I was like, hey, you know, do I get, you know, we've got to suss out some garden leave, you know, because there's got to be a period where I'm not allowed to work, a restraint of trade. But the MediaWorks lawyer is a fucking badass because New FM came with their lawyer and they're like, hey, he's not allowed to go on air. He's got a contract that says he's not allowed to work for 3 months anywhere. And then they came with their one lawyer, and we had the media works lawyer. There was like 8 of them in a boardroom. Those guys from UFM Wharf. Then they're like, all right, now you can start work whenever you want, mate.
New FM, we're like, just kidding.
Jokes. Yeah.
I forget, because it's become so normal for me to hear you on my FM.
Yeah.
I forget how tense that must have been. And I remember it was a huge shakeup.
Oh, it was pretty much a cleanup of people that I respected. Because I remember before MediaWorks eventually took over Maya, when it was still their own thing, they were looking to bring me over. So they got me to do a mock show with B-Rock at the time, Brent Meal. And we got along fine. I just didn't hear back from them, which is probably because they were getting moved out or something. Yeah, so that was rough. But I still had to work at that place with a lot of their stuff. So when I had been moved in, Hayden was kind of still floating around taking his stuff. Jazz, guys like Big D, all these old MyFM people were still in the building, so it was real awkward to work.
When the opportunity for the morning show came up, how did that come up?
I was happy in Drive. At that point, we had got it into a nice little position. I was going head-to-head with Fletch and Vaughan, and they were dominating the market, so I think that was my third year in doing Drive, and we had just got on par with Fletch and Vaughan. But our breakfast show wasn't doing too good. And it was another shitty situation my boss put me in, but he pulled me into the office and he said, how would you feel about going to breakfast? And I was like, I kind of like what I'm doing now, because I go out, I get fucked up, I wake up at 10 in the morning. I have like brunch and Ponsonby, and then I rock up and then I come in. And we had only just talked about it. He just floated the idea. And I remember driving to work and my phone going off, and it was a friend of mine who was on the breakfast show. I thought, oh, fuck, I don't really want to answer the phone while I'm driving, but he kept ringing. Then I answered the phone. I was like, hey, man, what's up? And that's where he just unloaded. He was like, fuck you. I thought you were my fucking brother. I thought you were my fucking shit. So you shake my hand every day when I leave and you hug me. You ask me how my family is. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And he was like, fuck you. Hung up. I drive into work. His wife is there. She's crying. She's hugging him. He's crying.
Oh, my gosh. This is so dramatic.
Yeah, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I walk past him. I was like, hey, and he's like, fuck off. Leave me alone. Oh, okay. Oh. Walk upstairs, and my boss goes, hey, you got the job.
Good news.
Yeah. And I was like, nah, man. This is fucked up. This is nuts. Yeah. So.
Oh, so too, like, both times at my, you get your respective positions.
And I swear to God, like, if this guy ever listens to this, like, I had no say in that whatsoever. I love that dude, and we kind of bump into each other every now and then, and it's a limp handshake or it's a
harden up your handshake, man.
We should have got him on the show.
Yeah, we should.
Special guest surprise.
Yeah, surprise. Yeah.
So that was the end of 2012, and then from 2013, I was on the morning show.
Do you feel a certain kind of pressure on your shoulders to, I guess, as a Pacific Island broadcaster, or I suppose as one of the most visible PI voices in mainstream media, like, how do you carry that pressure?
I didn't handle it so well when I first started out, but then I kind of figured out that all these people that were always saying things about how you need to act and how you need to represent your people better were just the vocal minority. And these were people already in a position of privilege that didn't do shit themselves. So these were the people sitting at the top end telling me how I should behave and how I should talk. But when I go out in the trenches and I see people where I was at, you know, driving a forklift or boxing up shit in a factory, they appreciate having a laugh and hearing a guy tell them about. Because, I mean, I've got a good job now. It doesn't mean I'm driving a Merc around. Or one of the coolest things is just having people tell you that I can help them get through their day because they know there's another guy having a shitty time just like them.
So escapism is important.
Yeah, it is. But through doing this, I kind of, at one point, I kind of resented being Pacific Islander just because all the pressure that came my way from people wanting me to be at this charity thing, or can't say this, or you can't act this way, or you can't do this. And I got to the point where I kind of just acted out and I was like, fuck you guys, I'm at my FM. So you want that shit? Go talk to those people in your FM. I've had that since I started. It's like, oh, you guys don't do this and don't do that. And I was like, well, motherfucker, go look at my ratings. So what are you? Go look at my ratings right now. The guys at the edge are looking at my ratings and having a cry. So.
Do you ever feel, though, that you're like, oh, maybe if we could, like, say the elections just happened, are you like, should we talk about this a little bit more? Is it, like, our responsibility? Do you feel that that's ever your responsibility?
I think there's a time and a place.
Yeah, and MyFM is not the place.
MyFM's not the vehicle. Like, you don't expect the guys at the edge or the rock or to have a serious conversation. Yeah, we're brown, but at the same time, we're an entertainment outlet. I always see people going, fuck you, where's the real news? Like, have you fucking looked? Why are you looking at me to educate you on how you should vote? Like,
yeah right. You know, so this is not that you come here for entertainment. If you want real news, go to the real news outlet.
If I want to, you know, be informed on how I'm gonna vote, I'm not gonna watch Jono and Ben. Yeah. I'm not gonna email Jono and Ben like, how could you do this skit and not inform me about the mayoral candidates? You know?
Yeah.
So I sit there and I look at these people. I think it's okay to kind of reason with someone. So if we're on here, like you can't, we have to be a mirror, you know? Mm. We have to be a reflection, but not at the same time. We're not checkpoint.
You can't be all things and to I'm all not people smart. As well.
Yeah, no?
You are smart. No. This is what sometimes you'll say on the radio, oh, I don't know how to spell that word. I don't know what it means. I'm like, yes, you do. You don't have to do that.
No, see, I put my faith in other people that are better at thinking laterally than I am. So I'm like, there's somebody that can do that better than me. I would rather you go to that person, you learn from them.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, I can kind of understand things that are going on, but I'm not your go-to.
I thought it was interesting when you talked about in Samoa that the way you survived was words were your currency.
Mm.
And that's what it is right now, right? Words are your currency. And
I think I've harnessed it better here. I think one thing that kind of stuck with me was an old Chris Rock skit where he said, if you're ugly, you better pick up a book. And if you're fat and ugly, you better pick up 10 books. So to me, I was like, okay, so we got to figure out what we're good at and make sure that we're really good at it. One thing I remember is, I think it was 2014, we got this message on our Facebook page. And it was from a dad who was sitting in his van with his three kids, and they just buried their mum, his wife. And they were sitting there, and they were at the airport lookout in Auckland City, and they listened to a story that I told. They had all just been sitting there silently, and they were just having ice cream, and they were just sitting there, and I told a story, and they all cracked up. And they all were still laughing about their story on the way home. So, you know, to me, I was like, you know, I can take all the criticism from the PI community about not doing this or not being an advocate for this or whatever. But if people like that are getting by just by a stupid joke or a prank or something, then that's okay by me.
Anything else you want to add at all?
I'm just thinking about these. First, I want to apologise about something. Fuck, I'm a Samoan and I came with nothing. Like, I didn't bring any food. Like, you guys got bunkekes and twisties and cokes. And I've been sitting here the whole time kind of thinking, fuck, you're embarrassing. It's like, I came with nothing.
It's all good. This is the whole premise of the thing. Yeah. So, and I didn't tell you that either, so it doesn't matter. And I'm like, we should probably start eating this.
Yeah,
I've just been looking at it like the whole time, pretty much.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much anything else. Oh, just the white people. Especially in this fucking business in New Zealand. Hey, stop just using brown people to play extras as security guards on your fucking TV shows. Or these guys won't have, they probably get angry at me if they ever hear this, but I never reply to John and Ben's emails anymore.
Yeah.
Last year, Ben sent me an email. He was like, hey, man, can you help us out for a skit? I was like, what do you need? I was like, we need a security guard. So fuck you, man. The one time you need me, you want me to play a security guard. And then later on, like, hey, can we use you for something? It's like, what do you need? And like, we need someone big and scary.
Oh, fuck that.
I was like,
that.
Fuck out of here. I didn't even reply. Uh-huh. I like those guys, but I just don't think they know.
No,
like,
they don't know. They don't you know. Don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know. Sweet. Sweet. It's a great time
to finish. That's good for me.
Cool. Done.